The biggest changes to our health system in two decades kick in today with the establishment of Health New Zealand, Te Whataura, and the Māori Health Authority, the Aka Whai Ora. From today, the 20 district health boards will start to be phased out. There will no longer be elected representatives locally. The government says the new system will strive for equity of access to healthcare for all New Zealanders, regardless of who you are or where you live. In a moment, we'll speak with the GP and the Senior Doctors Association, but first, the new Chief Executive of the Māori Health Authority, Rhianna Manuel, who explains how the two agencies will work together as they take over from the DHBs.
That's the work we've been doing in the background to make sure that, you know, the transition is as smooth as possible. So we have regional decision makers and we have district directors, if you like, to be able to make those decisions at a more localised level. But the systems are in place. We're ready to go. But for people in Joe Public, getting your services from your primary care provider and your hospitals and any other place that you go to get your health services from, those will continue as per normal. It is the back of office and the background functions that will become the national business of the Health New Zealand and Māori Health Authority.
How will the Māori Health Authority work with Health New Zealand and alongside? What's the cooperation? What's the division of labour? How's it going to work?
So, you know, like all good partnerships, we've set down a roadmap. So the New Zealand Health Plan is going to be a good guide to make sure that we understand how this partnership works. I must emphasise, and I do this often when I'm out talking with people, that both agencies are Crown entities. It's not like Māori Health Authority is representatives of iwi, by no means. But what we are is going to behave in a way that upholds the principles of Te Tiriti o Waitangi and work in that kind of a partnership way. So the division of labour is that, you know, at the end of the day, we know that there are some key priorities, equity being one of those priorities, Te Tiriti being another, and our job at the Māori Health Authority is to make sure that we get in there and we provide support around those areas and that we actually work on solutions that are going to, you know, move the waka, if you like. And though we know that health has a very deeply dug hull, we also know that the more hands we put on the hoi or the paddles, if you like, we will be able to move this waka along.
So it's a partnership, and on the one hand, we see something like $24 or $25 billion as the annual budgeted health spend in New Zealand. And then we look at the funding for the Māori Health Authority, and we've got $168 million for direct commissioning of services. So that suggests by far the bulk of the funding and the provision of the health service for Māori is still within that larger bureaucracy, right? So explain a bit more about specifically the role of the Māori Health Authority in commissioning.
So Māori Health Authority have several functions, but just to put it into context, we have 155 kaupapa Māori providers who will directly commission with, and that's a budget of $350 million. So those are contracts that Māori Health Authority will provide and work with our providers with. Then there is the additional, as you've noted, the $160-odd million that will be around additional commissioning, innovation, and providing workforce development, et cetera. So it comes out, yes, it's still only 2% of the overall budget spend. But what we've got to remember is that we also have a role as co-commissioners, which means the funding that is within Health New Zealand for commissioning will be co-commissioned with the Māori Health Authority. And, of course, the establishment of the Iwi Māori Partnership Boards means that we have real levers to make sure that at a locality level, at that really localised community level, that planning around health services will happen in partnership with those establishments as well.
So there's direct funding of kaupapa providers, but then within the giant that is the health system, you have a significant co-commissioning say in where the spends happen. Now, when we talk about equity, and specifically equity for Māori, where in the system isn't there an issue, and where do you begin to tackle it?
So it's not about trying to tackle one spot first, but making sure that we adapt those principles throughout the entire system to ensure that when it comes to equitable access of services, that we are getting equitable outcomes. Those are the things that we'll be driving through, because currently, majority of Māori, in fact, over 85% of our people, they seek their health services through our hospital systems, through primary care providers who are not kaupapa providers. The reason why we've got to be so active in that space. So that's definitely one of our key functions.
Where do you, as a health professional yourself, you have a nursing background. I know that that you're involved in elder care through a family business. But where do you look to start to begin the equity issues within health? And numerous research endeavours have shown it built into things like whether you get a particular cancer treatment or not, on and on and onwards. Where do you start with this issue?
So one of the things that we know is about a really strong primary care system will stop people getting really unwell. So you'd have to argue that starting at community levels, making sure that our primary care system has the screening diagnostics, the ability to treat people and keep people well, and screen and diagnose for things that we know are going to cause problems later in the piece. And that includes looking at prevention. So making sure that we have a strong public health system that's going to address the behavioural issues that our people need to transfer through. So when we have all of those parts, we know we're going to have less impact in the hospital systems. The less time we spend in the primary and public health system, or the less attention we pay to those spaces, the more we're going to see our people turning up unnecessarily in those secondary and tertiary systems. So that would have to be one of the areas that we would put a huge amount of focus on.
That feels like a long-term project, though, because a lot of that is about early diagnosis, but also about preventative measures. Do you see parts of the system where more immediate actions can be taken?
For sure. Screening and diagnostics is a prime example. That's not a long-term thing. That's just about making sure that we improve access to screening services. And if I can use just an example that I've seen recently, I've seen a partnership between a DHB and a kaupapa Māori provider where the DHB has put mammography services into a rural clinic that belongs to the provider, and also dental chairs to enable a more preventative and, of course, screening and diagnostic kind of a method that will see people access services earlier, sooner, and closer to home. And those are just some of the initiatives that, you know, that we've seen. We know that there are a lot of innovative wearables around at the moment that can be tracked and virtually monitored from a more centralized, larger DHB system, for instance, but really have an impact on people's lives out in rural communities. So there are a number of things that we can do quickly, that we must do quickly, to help create that, if you like, transition to transformation.
You mentioned primary care. First, we hear from the primary care sector at the moment that it is in crisis, as so many others are, that it's still feeling like something of a Cinderella service, despite it having been at the heart of numerous health strategies in New Zealand. But second, so many New Zealanders and so many Māori New Zealanders do not have access to primary care services in the first place. So what do you want to see happen there, and how quickly?
Well, I mean, I think urgently, because, of course, a lot of the ED presentations we see are people who are not enrolled in services and or people who can't afford the services that are out there in their communities. So, we want to make sure, and I've just got to say, I've worked in primary care for most of my career. It is, it is a lot of hard work, and it is always the determination and the commitment of the people who live in those communities to provide the great services. So we have doctors and nurses and kaiāwhina out there who have had an incredible incredibly hard couple of years, not just with COVID, but trying to make sure that they do the best for their communities. What I'm suggesting here now is that we have to take the next leap, which is that system alone is not working, particularly for Māori. And so what would we wrap around to make sure that Māori have better access to services, both at a primary care level, to make sure that we don't put additional pressures into other areas? Because ED is not a place to go and get your primary care services. We want the 10 to 20%, depending on where you live, of unenrolled people actually becoming enrolled in services, primary care services. We want to enable people to be able to get in there and, have the good screening services that they require to make sure we catch things early. Those are some of the things that we can do quickly, and we certainly want to focus on Māori having more equitable access in those areas.
What do you do about a cost barrier? And second to that, is cost necessarily always the barrier?
No. So what to do about a cost barrier is that one equitable way of dealing with that would be to say that, reduce the cost or take the cost out altogether for high and vulnerable populations who require it. Because at the end of the day, so, and again, I'll just talk from my own experience. I've been at the helm of a kaupapa Māori provider. We have six different general practices. And of course, we run a huge level of debt around our high debt, and you call it high debt, where people are not paying their fees. Now, we're not going to stop people accessing services because we want them to access services, but there's no point in carrying debt for our patients. We've got to find a better way to make sure that they can access those services. So that could mean for some of our people, no fee to pay. And I've seen examples again where primary care acute centres exist inside of hospitals, and those systems are free and make sure that everybody who needs the services can access the services.
And the question as to whether cost is necessarily the primary barrier.
I think it is a huge part of the barrier. So it would be, from my experience, we know that when we've taken the cost out of the question and we've put that service inside of an acute care system, i.e. they turn up to ED, they walk across a corridor to a primary care setting, then we know that people do access the services. So I think cost is a huge barrier for people, but also access, we saw during COVID, mobile services became a really handy tool to have. And actually, there was a lot we could do from a primary care setting out of the back of vans, out of the back of our cars, quite frankly. But mostly, we got these really souped up vans. We put a lot of services in there and made sure we had good Wi-Fi, took our Wi-Fi modems wherever we went, and we were able to, connect back to our services and provide people with care.
The argument that the system is under so much immense pressure at the moment, a pandemic, we've got flu, we've got staff shortages, we've got exhausted people, it can't handle reform right now. Your comment?
I think the point that we have all of those things is the reason why we need to push on with reform. What we have is not working. To stay with it any longer is only going to make that pressure worse. So we have to make a move on it. And, there is that saying, there's never a good time for big change, but you've got to do it. If we wanted a tree, we should have planted it 20 years ago. Now we've got to plant the tree. So let's get going, whānau. Do it collectively, together. We'll get the result we want.
The argument also that this reform is risks leading to bureaucratic inertia. Very interesting to see the Health New Zealand chair, Rob Campbell, declaring war, his words, on those exploiting the health system for their own gain. So there's the multiple interested parties involved, and then there is the health bureaucracy itself. I'm interested that you're basing yourself, and I understand the Māori Health Authority will be based in Tāmaki Makaurau in South Auckland. Is that deliberate? And then we'll talk about how to avoid bureaucratic inertia.
Yeah, so I mean, I've come from a community background, a kaupapa Māori background, and as you said, a registered nurse, so I'm a really practical person. I think South Auckland is the perfect place to base, particularly for Māori Health Authority. We've got a massive population of Māori who came here during the urban drift, and then we have our mana whenua whānau here as well. you know, it's about making sure that we can make the most impact. So let's be here. We could be, but I mean, my message is we have to be everywhere. Māori live everywhere in Aotearoa. There's not one place for the Māori Health Authority. We want to make sure that we're everywhere. So our people who work within the Māori Health Authority will be based closer to home because that makes good sense for them as well. There won't be a centre that we work out of. There won't, you know, we're not going to be this bureaucratic agency. We'll be, you know, we'll be like most things, Māori, nimble, quick, agile, and ready to, you know, ready to change when we...
Will your partner Health New Zealand be?
Yes, and they're going to be based here in South Auckland as well. So I mean, you know, we're both based together. That's part of the kōrero, is that, you know, good partners stay together. We, Margie and I, will lead out on that front, and all the way down through our different kaimahi will be working beside us, and out in our hospitals and out in our communities, all of that.
How will the regions be heard? And you mentioned the regional offices, but the concern is for all the flaws surrounding the DHB system, you know, the endless sort of debt issues, many arguments as to what the cause of that was, but also the failure to communicate sometimes, the technology wasn't talking to each other. People have said, look, you can fix all that stuff without necessarily losing your local boards. How will you ensure that every local voice will be heard, and again, as we said, not swamped in a bureaucracy?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, boards are usually a small number of people who have their voice. I think that there is a larger whānau voice that we've got to listen for as well, and that's certainly in the intent. So we're putting whānau at the centre of this activity, making sure that we hear their voices, whether by boards or not. We will have regional directors and, of course, district directors as well, who will be sitting there making sure that they hear that localised voice. We're going to stand up the Iwi Māori Partnership Board and actually have, you know, the voice of iwi and mātāwaka and of course those other areas of expertise feeding back and giving us advice as to what needs to happen next. You know, so there are a number of ways that you can collect the whānau voice, but I think it's making sure that we don't just rely on 20 boards who might all have, you know, addressing that localised need from their perspective, but we need to reach a little further.
Leanne Emanuel is Chief Executive of the Māori Health Authority, which, along with Health New Zealand, as she points out, it has its own budget, but is also a co-commissioner for all health services with Health New Zealand, both of them taking over the health system from today. 24 minutes past nine, it is on 9 to noon. With us now, we welcome GP and Māori health equity activist Dr. Rawiri McCree Jansen. Kia ora, Rawiri. Thanks very much for being with us.
Kia ora, Catherine. Good to be here.
Thank you. With us too, Sarah Dalton from the Senior Doctors Association, the Association of Salaried Medical Specialists. Morena, Sarah.
Morena, Catherine. Morena, Rawiri.
Yeah, kia ora.
Big day. Rawiri, your take first of all on what it is going to take for this new system to deliver.
Yeah, it is a big day. It's a moment, I think, that's pregnant with possibility. It's been a long time coming. I think we should locate this change in, you know, 20 years or more of activism around addressing health inequities. I think we've got to notice the Y2575 claim. Recently we had the Health and Disability System Review, and I guess that we've excoriated the problems that we had with the previous incarnation of the health system and how we got 20 autonomous health systems and some of the problems that that created. And now we've got this opportunity to be really dedicated and deliberate and unrelenting in having a focus on equity for Māori health. So I'm... really interested in getting some great progress out of this.
The timing and the stress on the system now, what is that going to take to fix? You're in primary care. We are hearing endlessly from primary care that it is on the verge of falling over. It was supposed to have been the strategic priority of years and years of health strategy, and yet declares itself in crisis. What is it going to take to deal with these immediate desperate needs?
Yeah, it's interesting. There have been sort of long-standing pressures in our health system, And I think that we are going to give ourselves permission to break through some of the old ways of doing things and create some new opportunities. One of the things I'd think about, you know, Rihanna's aphorism there of thinking about planting a tree 20 years ago, actually we've done some of that. And I think about, you know, Aotearoa being the first jurisdiction in the world to have demographic proportionality of medical graduates, and we're starting to see the benefit of that in all parts of our health system, actually having Māori doctors. And we now need to make sure that we've planted other trees, ensuring that we get Māori nurses, you know, and we've got to lift our graduation of Māori nurses, because that will be an incredible contribution to better health outcomes for whānau and for communities. In primary care, I think the solution will look like nurses. We are going to change the way that we organise and the multidisciplinary primary care teams that we need to deliver better outcomes are going to be significantly nurse-led. And so I think those are the things that we should be looking at, you know, planting those trees immediately, ensuring that we've got those kind of pipelines for developing the workforce that we need, and it has to start now.
We're at risk of losing that workforce apace at the moment. Nurses, 4,000 alone, estimated the shortage throughout the entire sector. Can you speak to pay? Can you speak to conditions? And can you speak to the funding of the primary health sector?
Yeah, like, personally, I'm really committed to the idea that we elevate and support the nursing workforce in ways that we haven't done well for a very long time. And that starts with recruitment in nursing schools, and then it works into how we get nurses working at the top of their scope. And we've got to have much more nurse prescribing. We've got to have more nurse practitioners. We've got to bend the system to make it really welcoming of the leadership and the professionalism of nurses in our system. We haven't done that well, but we must do it, and we've got to start now.
Now, Mihi, Sarah Dalton, how are your members, senior doctors, viewing this massive change? Again, a sector and a part of the health system under particularly acute stress now, but would you agree with Rawiri that actually goes back further?
Yeah, it goes back a really long way. Our members are well and truly fed up. A lot of them are angry. They are really under the pump, but there are also, you know, they always try. They want the system to work better than it does. And I would argue that there needs to be, the hallmark of the new system needs to be that it listens much better to clinicians. They are very smart. And when I say clinicians, that's doctors, that's allied health workers, that's nurses. They're very smart, and they already innovate, mostly despite the system, not with the support of the system. So we really need to lift them up, give them some time and space to help us to make it better, because they do know what's needed. But obviously there needs to be some tangible resourcing and investment to support that to happen.
So how does it happen? If it couldn't happen with the 20 district health boards, even within those health boards, and there were innovations within some of those health boards, I remember particularly Christchurch and Canterbury, clinician-led innovation. But how does it happen now with two national leadership organisations? How do you close the gap between the front lines and those making decisions?
So there's a couple of parts to that. And of course, one is that a big piece of the health predicament we're in actually sits outside the health system. And that's a conversation about the social determinants of health, like housing, like poverty. And I would just say I have already challenged Health New Zealand, their board, to become a living wage employer. And I think that that would be a huge tangible investment in the people who are both directly employed and work in funded services across the health system. So we need to move from a bean counting approach to health, to remember that if we're serious about he tangata, he tangata, he tangata, then we have to lift up and support the people already in the system. And part of that is about decent salaries, terms and conditions. And that means moving the agitation people feel about the size of Vote Health, and have a, you know, think more carefully about why that's a really big chunk of our budget and why it probably needs to be bigger still.
You're actually saying we've got to talk about tax, which is actually what the late Sir Michael Cullen wrote in his memoir just before his death. It's just the reality, the health system that we want and need, we will not have without paying for it. Interesting conversation to have the year before an election year. But back to how that flows through.
Yep.
Current salaries and working conditions, and they go alongside each other. If you cannot attract enough people to a profession or keep enough people in the profession, then the stress goes up on those who remain. Are you disappointed that even in the last 2 years, you have not seen progress, substantial progress on the salaries of doctors, but also of nurses and of others?
It's been really horrific. You know, I had a piece this morning talking about, you know, New Zealand's government is world famous for being kind through COVID, but they've turned a very cold shoulder to our health sector workforce all through COVID. And I include people working in, you know, GPs and community-based health workers as well in the funded sector. This whole notion of what public sector pay restraint might have achieved has really blown up badly in terms of our health workforce who have, and I know we're supposed to be looking forward today rather than back, but, you know, it's really left us in a tough spot because the health workforce, most of the tangible signs to them from the employers and from government are that we don't love you much, just keep on keeping on. And also, you know, the suggestion that we're not in a crisis. If we're not, I would hate to see what one looks like. So there's lots of work for us to do. And I think if we can try and do some things differently, you know, I am encouraged by the words of Rob Campbell and other Health New Zealand board members. I've found Rob, Sharon Shea and others very responsive, which is new for us to have that level of engagement from our health leaders. Both Rihanna and Margie are very responsive also, and I trust that will continue because at the end of the day, certainly for the hospitals part of the sector, a lot of the same people are being moved across to interim leadership roles, and they're the same people that have been overseeing cultures across hospitals that frankly have not been particularly kind to clinicians.
I wanted to talk to you about that. I mentioned the bureaucracy because it is an enormous, you know, system. We said $25 billion puts a dollar figure on it, but when you look at the scale of it from pre-primary care, as you mentioned, the determinants of health care and prevention, into primary and into the pressures on the tertiary system, when we look at the issues we've had from bed shortages in hospitals, diagnostics delays, primary care under pressure, staff burnout, staffing shortages, it's enormous. But I want to talk to you about the bureaucracy and the ability to have change happen. Have we had too many managers? Is that part of the district health board system that you would like to see left behind? Could we do with some fewer?
Yeah, I think Rihanna's point about a lot of the changes to the system are about what happens in at the back end of the system rather than what people experience when they visit a doctor or a nurse or a clinic or, you know, see an occupational therapist or whomever. I think one of our frustrations is that often when we are trying to improve conditions for doctors, our members, we are having to have these conversations 20 times across 20 DHBs. I certainly hope that if we are having big conversations about issues that affect all of our members, we may only need to have them once and then they will be rolled out. And that is a really sensible thing to happen. As you know, in 2020, we put out a workforce plan that suggested we should get a lot more upfront about mapping our current workforce, where they are, what they do, where the gaps are, and getting really serious about a time-bound plan to up staff and to let us all know what that looks like so we have a shared body of evidence that we can engage with, because that is currently not the case. And so that is my strong expectation for this workforce task force that has been announced, but about which we don't know any detail yet.
And which isn't the first workforce task force.
I know.
Namihinui, all the best to all of you today, however you feel about it. You're a precious taonga. And look, if it's a turning point for anything, then that's wonderful. And all the best to everyone under the extreme stress that you are right now. Thank you for the mahi. Sarah Dalton there, Senior Doctors Association of Salaried Medical Specialists, it's called. Kia ora, and thank you also to Dr. Rabari McCree-Jansen, GP and Māori Health Equity Activist, who's also filled numerous roles over recent years for the country, and earlier speaking to Rihanna Manuel, who is the chief of the new Māori Health Authority.